Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your primetime host, Thomas. From Tom Mattis, feel it? And this is episode 105 of The Prerogative. And with that being said, well, you know, I kind of warned you guys that this would happen from time to time, this semester. I'll with college and work and everything, there'll be times where I'll disappear for a whole month, and so I apologize for that. With that being said, I have to go over what our review is this week. You know, as you may remember, I said I was going to review Ruby, the web animation by Monte Hume and produced by Rooster Teeth, the same people of Red vs. Blood. I had planned on doing it, and in fact, I had recorded twice, in fact, I have recorded the episode for it, but it never sounded right. And it is something to where, you know, I really don't like, at least anymore. I did so in the past because I wanted to, you know, I'm an idiot and I want to show that I am an amateur because I am an amateur. But I have gotten more appreciative of my own work, and I really didn't want to put out something that was only a half hour and just didn't sound right. Not that I'm not afraid of putting anything out that's not a, it's only a half hour. I'm sure people would love that, and maybe I'd get more listeners because, again, there are people that like a lot shorter podcasts. But it's just, I felt like I was missing something, and I think that thing I was missing was I feel like I need to bring somebody on to join me to talk about it. And I actually know who I want to bring on, I have to ask them. But because of that, I'm planning on moving the Ruby review back to January of 2015. Or forward, well, however you want to say it. Moving back, moving forward somewhere. I'm moving it to January 2015 for the new season. It'll be one of the opening salvos. I actually have a couple plans for January. Oh, it should be good if I'm able to pull it off. Anyhow, so what am I reviewing this week? Well, you remember my last review, I reviewed, for the first time ever, I reviewed an actual movie that was still in theaters. I reviewed Book of Life. I know I did Frozen, I did it, but that was a short review. That was really my first comments on it as I came back from the theater. My full review was on Charlie Brown. I didn't feel I had enough content, and I thought, hey, that'd be a good little thing. It wasn't a full in-depth review. I would do that next February for Disney Month. Or as it turned out, March. Again, less said about that, better. Anyhow. This was my first time ever reviewing a movie that was still in theaters. And if you remember, and I've gone back and seen it again too, it is one of the best CG anime movies I have seen. It has everything I want in a CG animated movie. And I know that's my opinion, and I know there's high praise for it, but that's my feelings on it. Again, it's my opinion, it's my prerogative. If you may remember, I made mention that it was that Book of Life was only Real FX, which was the animation studio's second film. What was its first film? Well, that took place a year earlier, around Thanksgiving, and a little animated piece called Three Birds. And that is what we are reviewing tonight. That's amazing. We're going from one of the best to one of the, oh my god, I can't believe this shit stain exists, worse. You do not. I mean, you wouldn't think that of a film that has, I mean, it's being directed by Jimmy Hayward. You know, a man, one of the original animators of Reboot, worked on Toy Story, Toy Story 2, A Bug's Life, you know, Finding Nemo, Monster Inc., Horton Hears a Who. Yay, he made the live-action version of Jonah Hex, but you know, you can't always be perfect, okay? You're gonna have some shit in your career, alright? I mean, Scott Mosey, you know, why the man at part of the Smodcast with Kevin Smith, works with Kevin Smith, worked on Clerks, worked on all of Kevin Smith's projects. You know, you got a Saturday Night Live alumni as part of the voice cast: Woody Harrelson, Orson Owen Wilson, Amy Pontier, Keith David, George Takei. You know, this film should have been better than what it was. Maybe found the voice actors and all the names on the box. We'll get to that. Not the best example, but I mean, with the director and producer at least, and mind you, Scott also did the screenplay for this film, this should have been better than what it was.
This is your last warning.
But it wasn't.
This is your last warning.
So, I guess there's no holding it off. Let's get right into it. You want to know why? Listen to this synopsis. So, Reggie the Turkey has always been afraid of Thanksgiving because turkeys have always been on the menu. But despite his attempts to warn the ignorant masses of his farm-based flock, no one's listening. And, of course, this has made him an outcast. When the other turkeys finally realize what's going on, they throw Reggie outside in an attempt to save themselves. In a surprise twist of fate that doesn't involve Matt Hardy, he winds up in the hands of the first daughter of the president, who convinces her father, the president of the United States, to name him the Pardoned Turkey, and is subsequently took by the first daughter of the United States. Back to Camp David.
What do you think is best, brother?
Fuck you.
Take care of yourself.
Who cares?
To which my response is, oh,
take her easy.
Fuck you.
Stop, he's already dead. Just shoot him in the head already. Although initially hesitant, Reggie soon eases into a routine of doing nothing and enjoying pizza delivered to him by the pizza dude and watching Mexican telenovelas of the Lone Wolf. So, in other words, it's every day of old Wilson's life. About 3 days into Thanksgiving, Reggie gets bagged, kidnapped by Jake, a member of the Turkey Freedom Front, who tells him that the Great Turkey, William Shatner? The Great Turkey told him to find Reggie and take him back to the first Thanksgiving with him to take turkeys off the menu once and for all. They somehow infiltrate a base where a time machine is located, and despite interference by federal officers who just had 2 weeks left till retirement, I swear to God they did that joke, and an attempt by Reggie to trick him back to the surface, Jake manages to commandeer an egg-shaped time machine with an AI software named Steve, voiced by George Takei, and they travel back to 1621, 3 days before the first Thanksgiving, when they attempt to thank I would thank this movie if they actually put them on the menu, but they attempt to take turkeys off the menu. Strap in your seatbelt and put on your shit hats. Let's get into Free Birds.
There's a place up ahead.
And welcome back. Might as well start with music as we always do. You know, I mean, to be honest, I have listened to the soundtrack outside the movie, and it's not a bad score. Yes, we'll start with the score, because there really isn't any songs. There's one song. It's basically a remake of, or a cover, as you say, as it's called in the music world, of Up Around the Bend, you know, by Social Distortion. You know, that's what that you just heard it, so you know what song it's a cover of. It's a 70s song. So the rest is just a pure score, and the score itself isn't bad per se listening to it. There's just so much going on, there's so much noise in the foreground and everything. You really don't get a chance to listen to the music. It never really shines in the movie. It's really too quiet. And when it gets really loud, it's really obvious that the music is trying to make its presence known. And it just doesn't work well with what's going on screen. And that's ultimately its problem. I mean, the score itself isn't essentially bad. It's a pretty standard score, to be quite honest. You know, I mean, I guess not a bad outing for the first attempt, the first score outing by Dominic Lewis, who is a man who's worked with Hans Zimmer and other, and he's provided stuff for, he's provided musical attributes for, you know, Wreck-It Ralph and X-Men First Class and some other movies. This was his first, you know, main composer gig. And he didn't do a bad job, but he didn't do a good job. It's a pretty standard sort of movie, kids movie score. And again, that's not to sit there and say it's bad. It's just standard. And when you add the fact that it's pretty much forgotten by the movie, I mean, it's really out there. I mean, I'm looking at the score now. I'm like, holy shit, there was this much music. I mean, mind you, there's a lot of 30-second pieces here. There's one that's 30. There's another that's 52. There's a couple that are just a minute long. But still, I'm like, wow, there was this much music in it? And yet, a lot of it feels a substandard. You know, it really does. And in the movie, just everything that's going on screen, from the animation to the acting and everything, just completely walks all over the music. You know, I'm like, you know, again, I'm going to bring up, you know, I find it funny. You know, obviously, Real FX learned from their mistakes. This was really their first big movie, and they made a... Listening to this, watching this, it's a lot of big mistakes they made that they would not repeat and they would learn from when doing Book of Life. I'll get again back to that later. But yeah, the score, it's standard. It's okay. But it really does not come out in the movie. It's really hard to make out the music because it gets pretty lost in the shuffle of the movie. I guess that moves us on to animation, and it's CG animation. It's pretty, you know, you would think a film being directed by, you know, Jimmy Hayward, who has a lot of experience with CG, and I'm sure they have some, you know, at least somebody to, you know, some good CG animators. I don't know if they were able to bring any from any other, you know, studios. They did. But yeah. It was yeah, I don't like the animation. It was pretty substandard. You know what it seemed like? And this is something, again, I'll get to the story when I get to comedy. This seemed like a Mad TV or a Saturday Night Live. Welcome to Saturday Night Light! Oh, but a Saturday Night Live bit. Like, those cartoon bits that we all remember. This whole movie just seems like an extended CG version of one of those. Animation-wise, especially. And it's just... There's nothing in this movie that I really like. Really. At all. I mean, I guess it starts with the character designs. Oh, you know, I'll call him Owen Wilson because it's freaking Owen Wilson. But Reggie, you know, the blue feather, you know, the blue yodel and everything, and it's just. It's like, the character designs are too obvious, is the best way to put it. You know, Owen Wilson, he's smart, but he's ragged and skinny, and he's the underdog, and we're gonna make him. He looks like the Vulture from the Looney Tunes cartoons. And I would say that would be awesome if that's what they were going for, and they were trying to make that a reference within the character design, but I have a sneaking suspicion. That wasn't the point of the character design. I mean, you got Jake's character design, who's, you know, he's big, strong, proud, and smart like a sack of hammers. It's like, but he's got the heart of gold, and it's like, I know I'm going into character specifics here, but it's so, I mean, you, for pretty much, you can look at every character design and tell their entire story that's going to happen in the movie. And I know there's been times where I've said that's been a good thing, but that's usually in conjunction with a plot where it's not very obvious to what's going to happen. And so their character designs are a very good indicator to where they're going with the story, and they help tell the story as well. That's not the case here. Okay? This is far, far from this case. You know, Jenny, against her form is, you know, a bit sensual. You know, she's the girl next door, the lovely girl. Again, like I said, you can tell every story you want is seen within the character designs. You know who all the bad people are. You know who the goof, all the, you know, the character of the goofy mayor. Ho, 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 ho. It's like, what the hell am I watching? I expected better from this. And then, you know, you have the action animation that is. I'm like, am I watching what I'm watching? Am I watching turkeys use catapults? And guns and gunpowder? Really? I'm watching this. The action was just non-attractive, and it wasn't amusing. And it's like, it left me cold turkey. Which essentially made me want to quit this movie, cold turkey. I amuse myself. I have to with this movie because this movie did nothing to amuse me. I was constantly, whether it be animation, going through this movie going, really? 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 Please tell me you did not just do that. No, you did not just do that. Oh. God damn this movie. Ugh. Action animation pretty substandard. The backgrounds and the special effects, again, substandard. For instance, I'll give this an example. Where the turkey secret base is when they go back in time should be this amazing location. And they really don't showcase it that much. I think there's one shot where they circle around, but they're constantly really only at the throne room. And they could show much more of that, and it could be great, but instead they only show the throne room, and that's what I mean by that. It's like they have chances, okay, they could expand on this and make this background amazing and inviting and make you want to believe that it is real, but they don't do that. Same thing with the secret, you know, for instance, the secret government facility where the time machine is being held looks like it's ripped straight out of The Incredibles. It's like, am I really watching what I'm watching? Who put this to paper? Who put this in a storyboard and said, hey, yeah, let's run with this? You know, let's completely rip off The Incredibles, you know? I mean, did nobody, anybody, any, I mean, this goes to care because the characters, because the government workers are in these suits, and it's like, it's like, really, you went with this? You fucking ran with this. Fuck you. Mind you, again, I like to add that I did watch this like at 1 a.m. in the morning, but I was fully awake for it, okay? I don't want people to think that I wasn't fully awake. And I wasn't paying attention either. So, yeah, animation. Again, I'm just thinking, I find it amazing. They go from this, and then they do goddamn Book of Life. It's amazing. But I digress. It's time for a break. I'm going to play a promo for some podcasts that you should be listening to. And while you do that, I'm going to recover myself and prepare myself for more shitstorm ahead as we go into acting and into story. So I'll be right back, folks. After these messages, we'll be right
back. My name is Michael Bailey, and I am a terrible geek. I don't watch Doctor Who, I don't care for anime, I've never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I like Star Wars and Star Trek okay, but I've never really ventured far into the extended universes of either property. Hell, I have never even watched a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I've been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I've been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. To deal with this borderline personality disorder, I started a podcast in 2007 called
Views from the Long Rocks.
Every 2 weeks, or so, depending on real life, I pick a particular series, or issue, or character, or whatever to talk about, and then I talk about them, because that's kind of the point of a podcast. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I have a guest, like my semi-regular co-host, the Irredeemable Shag, or my other semi-regular co-host, Thomas DJ, or with another friend from the podcasting world. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. From there, you can find the iTunes link, the email address, as well as the backlog of episodes.
Views from the Long Box.
A podcast about comics, or a desperate cry for help? You decide. Every other Tuesday, or so, depending on real life, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
This is Tokyo. Once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud. Play it loud.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic. Foolish emotions. A constant irritant.
Then transpile out, freak!
Two!
Belong in the circus. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True! I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit!
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
Money. This isn't the biggest bag over the head. Punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton.
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
Thank God damn what he didn't kill off.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on,
hey,
let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I say shut up! It's a man-on! A man-on!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
And welcome back, and it's time to get into acting, which means it's time to go over our cast list. So, first we have Owen Wilson as Reggie, we have Woody Harrelson as Jake, Amy Pohanker of Saturday Night Live fame and Parks and Recreations, among others, as Jenny, the turkey, and the Native American turkey female leader in Reggie's love interest. My God, you dragged poor Dan Fogel into this, didn't you, you motherfuckers? Dan Fogel into Governor Bradford as Governor Bradford. Leslie Nicole as the Pilgrim Women. George Takei as Steve, the artificial intelligence of the time machine. My God, George, if you needed the money, we could have started a fucking collection, dude. Oh. Colman Murray as Miles Standish, a pilgrim hunter. Oh my God, you dragged poor Keith David into this, didn't you, you motherfuckers? Keith David as Chief Broadbeak, the chief of the native turkeys and his father. Jimmy Hayward as the president of the United States. It's... okay. They say President of the United States. Let's call this what it is. He's doing fucking Bill Clinton. Okay. Which led to the one joke I liked in the movie. Okay. And which, by the way, solidified the fact that I wanted the president's daughter to be thrown off Air Force One. But Jimmy Hayward, President of the United States, Ranger, Leatherbeak, and I guess all of the hazmats. You drag poor Jimmy... Poor fucking Jimmy Haywood into this motherfucker, didn't you? Kathleen Mayer as the president's daughter. Fuck me. Oh my God, you dragged poor Carlos Alzerki into this. Hole, you're saying? Brocco, for Rocco's Modern Life. He was the Taco Bell Chihuahua. They poured his dragged it. They dragged his poor ass into this motherfucker. He plays Almos, the Mexican Telemundo dude, the lone wolf. Joss Wilson as Gus, Danny Carvey as Danny. Wow, that was a stretch. I would say you dragged poor Dwight Howard onto this. But I'm like, you racist motherfuckers. You cast Dwight Howard and you name his character Cold Turkey. That's just cold turkey, turkeys. Fuck. Carlos Poncier as narrator and Al Genendo. Maybe I'm getting the two Carloses mixed up. I don't know at this point. I think I forgot which one is named who. Anyways, Robert Beltran is Chief Miskote, who, if I am not recall, you dragged poor Chek Tai from Star Trek Voyager into this motherfucker, didn't you? And last but not least, Scott Mosier is the pizza dude. Because he has one line at the end of the goddamn movie, so I guess he gets put into the cast. God damn this movie and this cast! You know how I've talked about in the past, and I give credit to Scott McNeil, one, because he's the first one I heard it from, and I have heard it from other voice actors about the whole, how many names can we put on the box? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I present evidence A to what Scott McNeil talks about when he says, how many names can we put on the fucking box? I mean, God damn it, Dwight Howard just has a part in this fucking movie just so they could probably put his name on the fucking box. Oh my fucking God. Let's go down this shitstorm. By the way, if you can't tell, I hate the voice acting in this film. It did nothing. There's one guy who did a great job. We'll get to him. And they dragged his poor ass into this movie. First you have Owen Wilson, who basically played Owen Wilson. Wow, what a stretch. And you had Woody Harrelson, to be fair, Woody Harrelson is playing Woody Harrelson is playing Owen Wilson, but this was basically, in a way, playing his part from Zombieland, just a whole lot dumber. And Amy played, Love Interest 265. Not that there's 265 Love Interests, but like, I'm gonna play it version 265. My point is, these three people did it for a paycheck. And which is sad, because these are good actors. And I've heard them in animated work where they do a great job. But again, I go back to what Scott McNeil says. This is just a paycheck. That's what this was. This was just a paycheck for them. And you can tell, because while their acting isn't bad per se, there's no passion in it. I didn't feel any passion in their acting whatsoever. This was just a paycheck. And I think for a lot of these people, it was just God damn it, George Takei, this was a fucking paycheck. Hence why I'm saying, dude, if you needed the money, we could have started a fucking collection. I'm like, really, we could have. Just everybody here. Jimmy Hayward basically is doing a Bill Clinton impression that seems straight off of Saturday Night Live. It's, as I said, Dwight Howard, I didn't even recognize him. I don't know of any character that was named Cold Turkey. I didn't hear him. Why he's on the fucking cast list, I have no idea. He may have been cut from the film. I may have missed him because I've been so mind-boggling, mind-fucked by the bullshit that was going on screen. I hated Kathleen Mayer in this movie. Maybe that was the point. Maybe she was supposed to play the annoying kid that you wanted to punt in the face through a field goal and go, it's good! And the sad part about that is she has the one joke that I actually do like in the film. Which we'll get to when we get to comedy. Oh my god. But yeah, I'm like, oh, please take her off screen. Take her off screen. Please take her off screen. I can't take her anymore. There is one actor. One. Just one. Who did an absolutely great job and actually had passion. And he's the one I am pissed off the most that they dragged his ass into this poor piece of shit. That's Keith David. Keith David, Chief Broadbeak. Didn't have the most lines. Probably had an average amount of lines. He had passion. He did a great job. And I love this character. And I felt the passion of this chief who wants to, you know, save his people. And they freaking kill him. This is just a paycheck for a lot of people. And you can tell because of the lack of passion. You know. It's not to sit there and say that anybody here does a bad job. But this is just a paycheck. Like, hey, you want to go over and voice a character? Absolutely. Here, read these lines. Oh, and they read these lines as a good actor does. But there's no passion in them. They just brought these people on because they wanted to see how many names they could get on the friggin' box. Again, as opposed to Book of Life, where it seemed that even if they were a big celebrity, they were brought on to play a role. And they were told what their role is, and they put passion into the role. Help me. I digress. Let's get into story. I can't bash it anymore. I just want to get away from voice acting because it makes me sad. It really does. Let's get into story and... what the hell am I talking about? I don't think story's going to get any better. The plot is so... This is why people talk about time travel plots being convoluted. Because they fucking are. I mean, it's just... Oh, you're making my head hurt with science. You really are. It's like, did seriously, did anybody stop and think, like, are we getting a bit convoluted? Or a bit too convoluted, for that matter? Nobody sat there and knew. There's ultimate... And I rarely say this about an Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. The new one. Because he wrote some episodes for that. And some of his episodes were kind of good. And I've seen other stuff where he's been the writer and it's been good. There's nothing about this that was good. Nothing. I mean, it's so... it was okay for a while... Till Reggie comes back, and then there's these multiple forms that are here to send him back on the right way because plot convenience. And it seems like everything that happened was plot convenience. It was so convoluted, like, I'm looking at, like, really? I mean, when they first said, you know, I was sent by the Great Turk, and they first showed it, and I'm like, yeah, that's probably Reggie, but it couldn't fucking be Reggie. There's no fucking way they would do something that, like, it's fucking Reggie, isn't it? Fuck me. God damn it. So, yeah, the plot, it's a obviously normal, regular, convoluted time travel plot. But ultimately, what doesn't make the film work... I mean, there have been films I've liked that have a convoluted plot. I'll be the first to admit it. But because it's the characters that pull the film through. This is not one of those films. Because what really hurts this film... Really hurts this film... Is that this is supposed to be a buddy comedy. Where's the buddiness? Yeah, they're in a lot of scenes together, but it's like... It seems, in particular when they're in the past, they have Owen's character more with Jenny, in fact, they do have more with Jenny than they have him with Jake. They have no time on screen for them to really bond. You know, it's this one thing where Jake says, this is what happened to me, and well, I'm going, and then he feels bad afterwards. It's like, really? Really? I have no belief in this relationship whatsoever as friends. It's just, oh, I need to feel guilty for the plot, because convenient for the plot. It's like, really, I'm watching this fucking bullshit. So, yes. I'm sorry, I'm being very coarse on this. It's like, I felt like this film was disrespecting my intelligence. And a large part of it, I think, was what this film was sort of supposed to be. Which leads us to comedy. I made mention of this before, and I'll say it again. And I really think this is why this film gets to me. I think this film was really envisioned as just one long CG animated Saturday Night Live or Mad TV bit. Because that's what it was. That's what it felt. It felt like I was watching Mad TV or Saturday Night Live through the entire movie. Because that's what all the jokes were. I mean, in particular, there's a point to where they put caricatures, and they look like Mad TV caricatures, or things I would see in the Mad, you know, magazine. All the comedy was like, it's just like, all of the comedy fell flat. The product placements, it's like, oh my god. There's one joke I like, and it comes from Kathleen Mier. God damn this fucking movie. I couldn't help but laugh at it, and I hated it at the same time. There's a point where she comes onto Air Force One. They've just parted, by the way, before, to where it's like the cliche. Such a cliche child, like I'm gonna play with you forever, forever. Oh, I'm tired. It's like, really? That's the part you've given her? Really? It's part of the part in Target where, like, Daddy, let's part in this one. She starts crying, and oh, the paparazzi are there. I'm like, this is why you don't bring your daughter with you. God damn it. It's a part in the turkey. They come with the Air Force One. She's showing her, like, here's the guard. He's tired. He has bowel movements. Here's Daddy's secretary that likes to spend time with. They basically made, I'm like, you basically made a she's sucking Bill Clinton's dick joke in a kid's movie. Fuck you. And yet I couldn't help but laugh. I'm like, I laughed at the pure fact that, oh my god, you put this in the fucking movie. I mean, basically, like, hinted that, you know, here's a secretary who really likes Daddy. It's like, god damn it. And that's, when that's the best joke of the film, you're in trouble. You're in real trouble. You really are. I mean, and the whole spoiler alert, though, I don't think anybody would be angry by me spoiling this. The whole, oh my god, at the end they take turkey and now everybody eats pizza for Thanksgiving. Really, is nothing sacred. It's nothing. You have to drag my poor pizza into this motherfucker. And of course, the final joke where, like, the whole Terminator, like, no, I'm from a different reality. Have you heard of the turducken? I'm like, fuck you. I was almost done with this goddamn movie. You, fuck you. It's, ugh. From start to finish, this was a shit stain. I you know what, when I planned on doing this review, I'm like, I don't like this movie, but I'm going to try to not be coarse. I'm trying not to be, you know, I'm going to try to be fair. I mean, there is a decent score to it. The animation is not like, I mean, I'm not sitting here and saying that the animation is like the cheap knockoff variety like we see coming out of Sweden and all those. And all those other knockoffs of obvious Disney and DreamWorks movies that come out. It's good animation. It's just bland and predictable. And again, as I said, the actors don't do a bad job acting, they just have no passion. And when you add in a story that is convoluted, that's supposed to be a buddy comedy, yet you don't have the buddies have time together to become buddies, filled with a comedy that feels like the jokes they threw away during brainstorming sessions of Mad TV and Saturday Night Live, you know, yeah, this was a fucking foul bomb. And yes, I'm saying foul as in F-O-W-L. Because it is a foul bomb. It's the best way to describe this movie. And it was in the theaters. And again, I go back to this thing. I find it amazing that if there is one other positive I can bring about this film is, you know what, if you think about it and you look at Book of Life, if it wasn't for Freebirds, I don't know if Book of Life would have been as good. Now, mind you, they did have Guillermo del Toro that helped with the directing as well. So, yeah, maybe you can sit there and say that helped. Not that may have helped. It did help. That probably helped because he probably, like, if they were bringing some of the same stuff for Book of Life, he was probably going, what the fuck are you doing? No, get the fuck out of here. But you know what? I'll be honest, at least for the animators, I have to sit here and look and say, you know what? If it wasn't for Freebirds, Book of Life may have not been as good as it was. Because I definitely think Real FX learned from their mistakes, at least in the animated part of it. And hopefully they did learn in working with Guillermo del Toro about the other mistakes they made, which allowed them to do good voice acting, good music, good animation, good storytelling. But this right here, this was a foul bomb. I give this movie a 1 out of 5. You know, we have so little Thanksgiving movies. It seems every time we get a Thanksgiving movie, it's a fucking dud. And it's really sad, because Thanksgiving is a great holiday, and I wish there were more. I wish there were better Thanksgiving movies than the just one in goddamn Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. You know? So, 1 out of 5 for me. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Remember, if you have any emails or comments or anything you want to say, remember there are several ways to contact the show. One, you can contact the show at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also send us a comment on our Stitcher account, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. Like us and leave us a comment there. You can also find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com and searching for The Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes everything on The Absolution Network. CMJ's Wrestling Reviews, Tom's Top 10, the new Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast featuring my co-host Edwin, Shin Tiger Curls Video Reviews, those and stuff, does great stuff, John Ramos's Video Reviews, and I know for a fact he's told me he's coming out with the Super Sentai stuff soon. And of course I have a podcast in the can with John. I hope to get it out this month as a special. And I may get some videos out as a special. Also, make sure you check out my other 132 production sites. Comic Book Crazy, which features all the different variations of the Comic Book Crazy podcast. Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Jim Bale's Terror, Witch of the Black Rose. And, of course, Spectacular Webs, which reviews the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series. You'll find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. While you're at the site, make sure you check out our sidebar where you can check out all our friends and all their great podcasts. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles, Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Good Gardner and the 2-2 Freaks Podcasting Network, among many others. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Frog Gift. Well, now that we've covered something that is horrid and one of the worst, we're actually going to go to something that is, I feel, one of the best. In an age where Disney had the market on the fairy tale princess, there's one movie that dared to come up and challenge it in the late 90s. One movie that dared to challenge them after doing good songs and everything. A film directed by Don Bluth. Ladies and gentlemen, it's December, and it's time for us to remember what happened once upon a December. Ladies and gentlemen, on the next Tom's Rugged, we review Anastasia. So until next time, my Tsunami Generation, find cover. It's gonna get dangerous. Stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.